Well, this morning we are wrapping up our series, Money Crazy. If you're new or if you're visiting with us today, just to catch you up, you're coming in kind of the end of this story. The last 3 weeks, I've spent trying to convince everyone that there's a big shift that needs to take place from our culture, our society's way of thinking about and dealing with money and possessions to what the Bible has to say, because that way of moving from the way our culture and society looks at money, which is sort of money crazy, to a Jesus crazy way of thinking about how we deal with money and possessions can bring us peace and contentment and alleviate a lot of the tensions and the frustrations that we feel around money. And I've tried to set that up, you know, the first week talking about this idea of letting go of ownership. And in really embracing a stewardship mindset and embracing that we're all at some level or another greedy. We all want to see the things that come to us as for us and to spend those things, all those financial benefits on ourselves. But that actually that doesn't work, that greed actually turns in on itself and actually isn't very productive. It leads to stress and a desire for more, always for more. And so letting go of that and beginning to move towards generosity by practicing what we talked about last week. We talked about these practices of giving as a priority and as a percentage, saving or paying off debt, and then living off the rest. That's the pattern of what we've been talking about. But today, as we wrapped up, what I really wanted to do was to put some texture on that, because I can talk about the principles. I can try to be compelling and winsome and share about how the Bible says that this is true and how other people through time and history have experienced this. But you know, sometimes we need to see it with skin on and hear really practically what it looks like. So the first plan that I had and how to do that was Bruce Sonnenfeld from our community, who has worked teaching principles of biblical stewardship for years through Crown Financial Ministries, was going to come and share his story. And then last Sunday, or actually I guess it was Saturday night, Bruce had, for those of you in the medical field, a triple A, which is an abdominal aortic aneurysm. Yeah, it's as bad as it sounds. And so Bruce had emergency surgery last week, and thankfully he's here with us today. He's fine. He's recovering. Very glad to see Bruce here. I told him when I went to the hospital last week to see him, I was like, you know, there's easier ways to get out of preaching than this. You could have just told us if you don't want to do this. So Bruce has graciously agreed to postpone his message, and sometime later in the summer or maybe early in the fall, we're going to get him back up to share the message that he'd prepared for today. But today, I'm excited to get to share with you a wealth of knowledge about practically how we practically live out biblical stewardship that I've had the benefit of learning from for the last years in marriage. My wife, Kate Redden, is a certified financial planner and has taught me probably more than anyone in the day-to-day of living practically what it looks like to live out biblical stewardship. So join me in welcoming Kate up today. So it may sound sort of self-explanatory that you're a financial planner or financial advisor, but maybe for people who aren't familiar with that work and what you do, share, Kate, just a little bit about what it means to be a financial planner, financial advisor. What does that work?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a certified financial planner. I'm also a chartered financial consultant, and then I'm also a certified kingdom advisor. So that just means I've had a lot of years of learning.
She's taken a lot of tests.
a lot of schooling. but practically what I do is work with families and individuals to help them develop a plan to reach their financial goals. And so that can look different for everybody. Everybody's situation is a little different. Sometimes I actually manage the assets according to the plan. Some people, it's more about cash flow and learning how to save correctly and towards the right goals and in the right time frame, et cetera. But it can get very complex with business ownership and estate planning issues and complex tax strategies. So it encompasses a lot of different things.
Yeah. And I know you've said that a lot of times people who come to you and hire a professional, they have complex situations. But for a lot of your career, you've also worked with people that just needed guidance, hourly counsel. And so it's not just for the rich, what you do, the kind of work you've done. It's not just with the uber wealthy. It's with people who just need help figuring out, how do I send my kids to college, or how do I accomplish this goal with finances, right?
Yeah, so, as we have talked about for the last 3 weeks, you can't separate your finances from the rest of your life, or your spiritual life, or what you believe to be true about God and the world. And so finances really touch everybody. And so that can be people just getting started and figuring out what their goals are and how to save for those and where do I save first, and some very basic questions. But that can also be people who are further down the line and they've built up a wealth of possessions and businesses, and they want to struggle more with what to do with that. How do I manage this wisely? So it's a broad array of questions.
And one of the things that's really unique, it's differentiated the work you've gotten to do, is that you've worked first for a firm and then now for yourself, which has afforded you the opportunity. You've been able to really practice these principles and teach these principles of biblical stewardship. I wasn't joking when I said you really have taught me a lot from the study that you've done in being able to bring this perspective of biblical stewardship into working with your clients. Talk a little bit about the difference that you see between kind of the traditional environment, financial environment, and what you've been able to do, bringing these principles to bear.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned week one that the Bible has a lot to say about money. It does. And unfortunately, it doesn't have a lot to say about investing, but that's a different subject. But it has a lot to say about money. And, I feel like, the Bible really at its core is a book of wisdom. I mean, there is a lot of wisdom and truth. And what better place to use wisdom than with your money? And so really helping people to understand, what the Bible does say, what is God's view of money, and how to apply that to our lives on a day-to-day basis. And, there can be specifics, there can be, general ideas, and, there's just so much there. A lot of the financial services industry, and as many people, hear and read and are familiar with financial services, it's mostly about just growing the pot of money. But what I do that I feel like is a bit different is growing the pot of money for a purpose. What's the reason? What to do with that? Why have I been given these assets to manage? And then figuring out, what the right answers are as far as, what to do with that in the world and, even in our own lives, how to handle that from a lifestyle perspective. So there is definitely something to be said for, saving and growing assets, but there needs to be a reason behind it and a purpose.
Yeah, and that's really the, as we talk about that, I mean, that's what the stewardship mindset begins to look like. It's not sort of the unbridled or unending accumulation of assets, but it's what is the purpose? If I am a steward and this has come to me, then what is that for? What's the point, or what's the purpose? And over the last 3 weeks, I've been trying to make this point that this way of living actually makes a significant difference, that as we become more generous, like there's tangible, and we were talking even this morning, what are the things that you've seen as a financial planner, financial advisor, working with your clients? How has shifting in this direction changed people's perspectives, changed people's experience of life and money? What have you seen? What's your experience been?
Yes, so there's, obviously some general changes in just the way people live and approach life. I've seen quite a bit of peace and contentment and just less anxiety. The people who really get this don't call me when the market goes down for a day or two. I mean, they understand that their hope and their trust is not in their wealth and in what they've managed to accumulate, but that their hope is in God, and that their part is to be a good steward, to manage wisely, to make good decisions. And then there's things that we can't control, and so they just really have more of a sense of peace and contentment and understanding of what's important. You know, generosity is a big part of what I see, which is the most exciting part to me, is really starting with that piece of, what do I give back from what I've been given? And, that's different for everybody as well. But just understanding the freedom that comes with that. And, it's almost counterintuitive, but, when somebody begins to experience anxiety or stress, financial pressure, if they actually turn around and give more or take that anxiety and redirect it towards, how can I give back or give more, it really tends to solve the problem. I mean, the anxiety just really begins to disappear. And so it's counterintuitive. It's exciting to see. I really actually love the stories, too, of children and how families work with children around this idea of money. I mean, for so many, generations past, money was, you don't talk about money at home. And, kids didn't really see the finances of the family or really get let into, that part of the family life. But what I've encouraged clients to do and what I see a lot of and what is just fun to witness is when you do bring kids into that and teach them from an early age. I think it was last week you brought up the give, save, spend, mm-hmm. and that is so simple. It's three little words, but it is transformational. And when people really grasp that concept of give first, save, and then spend what's left over, and they pass that on to their children, it can really have lasting impact. It can help those children not make some really bad decisions later in life. They just begin to understand money in a different way completely and bringing kids into generosity. We're not born as generous people. We are born selfish and greedy. You don't have to teach a child how to be selfish. They're not born wanting to share.
All the parents are laughing.
Well, it's true. It's true. Right. And so that's something they have to be taught and they have to learn and they have to observe it. And so to bring children into that part of the family life is just so exciting to see. And, I even encourage my clients to open a family giving fund and make that part of the family discussion. And, what do we do with this money? And really helping them to understand, this is more than we need. And we want to do something important and something that is in line with the heart of God and help letting kids be part of that decision can just be transformational. So that's always one of the most exciting parts of what I get to see. I'd say another part is financial freedom. Just, it's a buzzword that has been used a lot, but to truly see that freedom and to see how it allows for flexibility. One of my favorite stories is of a client who followed these principles. And on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't always feel revolutionary. It doesn't always feel like, there's an aha moment or the skies open up. It's just every day waking up and deciding to do the right thing, to follow the principles. And then one day he wakes up and he's in his 50s and he's gotten himself into a position where he's flexible to make a change in his life, to go where God's leading, to go into ministry because he's followed the right principles. He's out of debt. He's, he's got enough in savings and to have that freedom to make that choice is really exciting.
I think it's so great you bring that up because this morning we were talking about it. And I'm like, what's your story? The first part, what's the best story? What's the really inspirational, this person did this and then their life radically changed and they went from anxiety to freedom. And she's like, yeah, it doesn't really work that way. It's lots of slow, purposeful, and I'm like, duh, well, that's just kind of like how life is, right? God, we don't have a Harry Potter God who waves the wand and suddenly transforms. It's, the practice of following God and trusting in these principles and then following them over time are slow, measured steps that sometimes you don't see until you look back on a lifetime, or the inverse, that you don't realize until, you get to the end of life and you have regret about things that you didn't do. So I want to take some time, and we've set up this framework that we talked about, the give, save, spend. And this week, I actually put a post out on our website and on social media to ask if you guys had any questions from the first 3 weeks. And so I got some questions that I want to, and I've categorized them around. They kind of fell into those categories of give, save, and spend. So starting with giving, as we're talking about this process of being purposeful and giving as a percentage, someone asked a question, why is tithing 10%? Where does it say that in the Bible? Talk a little bit about, I touched on it last week, but talk about this concept of the tithe and is it relevant for us? Where does it come from? Say some more about that.
So the word tithe actually means tenth. It's an Old English word that just means tenth. So that's pretty practical of where the word relates to the 10%. But the first time we actually see it in Scripture and historically is when Abram gives back to God a tenth of what he's been blessed with. And that was as early as Genesis 14, I believe. I mean, early on in Scripture, we see that as a response to what he had been given. Don't mistake that for giving in order to get more. It was giving in response to having been blessed. And so that's the first time we see the concept of giving a tenth. Later in Numbers, I believe, Moses actually institutes the tithe as part of the law. And it is intended to go to the church, the priests, the Levites, and to support them because they didn't have other income and other work. And so that became part of the law. That's where we get the idea of giving a tenth to the local church. I get that question a lot. Am I supposed to tithe to the local church only? And that's where that comes from, is that there was a law that the tenth was to go to the Levites.
It's funny, a lot of people listen to Dave Ramsey. He's super hardcore on that. Tenth goes to the church and everything else is offerings. He uses this very, kind of Old Testament language around tithes and offerings. But some people have this.
Well, and that's where it comes from.
Right.
But if you read further, and this is where people often stop there at the tenth, but if you read further into, Numbers, Deuteronomy, there's actually the first tenth goes to the Levites, the priests, but then there's other mandatory giving offerings to take care of widows and orphans and the poor and religious festivals. And so if you add it all up and really look at what the ancient Israelites were called to give, or mandatory supposed to give, was actually more like 23%. Per year. And
which most of the law, they never followed. They never actually fully followed through with that. Yeah. Historically, they look back and say, yeah, that's what they were supposed to do, but didn't necessarily follow through.
Right. So I actually personally have a little bit of an issue with church teachings over the years. I feel like historically the church has somewhat limited people's generosity by preaching just a tenth. There are many people who can afford to give more than a tenth, but they've been told tenth is all you have to give. That's the tithe and that's it. Go do what you want with the rest. And, I feel like that's a starting place. And especially for those of us who want to support the local church, but also want to give to, missionaries and organizations and people doing good work around the world. I think, we're just not challenged enough to stretch beyond this idea of the tenth.
Yeah. Well, in the verse I looked at last week, we talked about this concept that, it's not about a rule or a law, because that doesn't change our heart. Ultimately, Paul says, hey, decide. God loves a cheerful giver. Decide. Everyone should give what they've decided in their heart to give. So the point is that following the law didn't bring freedom to the Israelites. It doesn't bring freedom to us. So if you're giving out of a sense of obligation because I have to, or I'm supposed to, or that's what it's the wrong place to start. It's examining your heart and saying, I recognize I've been given. How can I give? Where do I begin? And
right.
I made the joke last week. A tenth is a great place to start because it's easy math. So,
well, and this actually brings up the question too, which I get a lot: am I supposed to give off the gross or the net? And that's the wrong question. That question is really asking how much do I have to give instead of how much can I give. And so, typically, when I get that question, I'll just respond with yes. You are to give off the gross and or the net. It's not a percentage. It's not a number. Sometimes I'll actually respond with, do you want to be blessed on the gross or the net? And then, I mean, this comes from a verse in Proverbs that says it's more blessed to give than to receive. It's not about if I give more, I will be blessed more. It's about it's a blessing to be able to give. And so the more I give, the more I experience the blessing of giving. And so don't mistake that for if you give more, you get blessed more. That's not the way it works.
Somebody asked to explain what is the prosperity gospel. And I kind of hammered on this last week, but this is that idea that somehow or another people have pieced together verses out of the Bible to make them say what they want. And what they often say is, yeah, if you give, then you'll get more in return, which is actually greed. That's just wanting more. And so I'm going to give selfishly because I'm going to get more tangibly in return. But I don't think that that's the kind of blessing that Jesus has in mind when he talks about that. Tell the rich to be rich in good deeds and to be generous and be willing to share. And when Paul says everyone should give and give with a cheerful heart, there's a sense that as we become more and more, our character begins to look more and more like God. We begin to experience the blessing of being like him, which is God is generous. He gives everything to us. He gives life. He gave his son. And so in a sense that we begin to experience the blessing of what it is to be like God in that, that's not what the prosperity gospel teaches, which is, if you give more, you get more in return.
Well, and the reality is God doesn't need our money. He doesn't. I mean, it's
his already.
Right. His purposes are going to be fulfilled in the world. He wants for us to be able to be part of that and to experience the joy and the blessing that comes from being part of what he's doing in the world. And one of the ways we can do that is by giving to, to these things that are happening around the world. And, it's a joy, it's a blessing, and he wants us to experience that.
Yeah, we focused, this series has been all about, the way we use our money, but stewardship is a much bigger concept, which, you could talk about the stewardship of your time, the stewardship of your abilities and your skills. So stewardship is a way bigger concept, but as we talk about it, as it relates to money, giving is an important part of that. The next kind of category that we talked about, the next practice is saving and paying off debt, and a lot of you had questions about that. Someone wrote in and asked, is carrying debt against God's will? How would you answer someone who walked into your office and said, is this against God's will for me to have a mortgage or a car payment, or what would you say?
So when I first hear that question, I hear it being asked as, is debt a sin? And the answer to that is no, debt is not a sin. Is it against God's will? So God's will for all of us is that our whole lives glorify him. And it's pretty simple. I mean, that is his will. So it's difficult at times to glorify God when we're burdened with debt and financial pressures, and we're slaves to to whoever we owe money to. So from that regard, it is not fulfilling the best that we can be in what God wants us to be. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It is, but it is certainly a goal to be debt free. I mean, that's with all of my clients. One of our goals, whether they tell me or I tell them, one of our goals is to be debt free at some point in life. And so, working towards that, obviously there are some debts that take longer than others to be rid of, such as a mortgage. But certainly, being debt free is a worthy goal.
Yeah.
And well, allows us to be more free to glorify God.
Yeah. And again, this is another place that I think we can creep into the rule following mindset. And am I breaking the rules? And I don't think right or wrong is even the right way to think about it. But as it relates to this, is it a wise decision? Is this leading me more towards life? The Bible has a lot of cautions against debt. But the reality is most of us have have taken on some sort of debt that was for a purpose, for a house or student loans. One person asked this question. This is a really practical one that I think maybe a lot of people are sitting in today. Student loans. I've always heard they're smart debt, in quotes, but it seems like more and more kids are graduating with boatloads of debt. What's the wisest way to do schooling if parents aren't paying?
So the concept of smart debt really comes from the idea that if I make this investment up front, then I'll be able to make more money over my lifetime and pay the debt back, and it will be a positive ROI, return on investment. That's the idea of smart debt. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. That can be true for certain professions. If you take on student loans to go to medical school, and then you can be earning a very significant income over the rest of your life, then that might have been a smart debt to take on. If, however, you go to a liberal arts private college and get a degree in philosophy, you may never pay off that $250,000 worth of student loans that you took on. So that becomes not smart debt. So it really depends on the situation. I think we're living in a very different time as far as education. My generation, and I am quite a bit older than some of the people that are currently in school, but we went to college to kind of figure out what we wanted to do and to find ourselves, and it was just kind of a middle ground between high school and the real world. And, you know, that was the experience of many people in past generations. But I think with the cost of college these days, and it is inflating at about 5 or 6% per year, which is almost twice as much as the rest of goods and services, I think people need to be really, really purposeful when they consider college, and they need to know before they go into higher education, you know, what it is they want to do with that degree, and then make some decisions with that. There's always the consideration of not going to the private 4-year liberal arts college that may cost $50,000 or $60,000 a year. There's some really good community colleges and junior colleges that can offer a great education and be, you know, wonderful for the career that you've chosen. We also have talked about for our kids, and I think it's a great idea, is if you don't know yet what you want to do or what you want to study, then a gap year can be really helpful to spend that time, not to travel across Europe with a backpack. I mean, that's fun too, but to really spend that year, shadowing people who have different careers or doing an internship or taking on several different jobs to really see what it's like out in the real world. What do I want to do? And then go back to college to get the degree that's necessary for that. So there's multiple options. If student loans is the only option, then, I think certainly taking as little as possible and even working while going to school so that you're stretching out that college education and being able to pay for some of it along the way is a smart idea.
Yeah.
But it's not a given anymore that you should just go to a 4-year college and get student loans to pay for it.
Yeah, I think there's a whole generation that there was, you know, this is beyond just a financial question, but there was sort of an implied social contract. If you go to college, you get a degree, things will work out, you'll have a better income. And I think this is maybe the first generation that's really dealing with the repercussions of betting on that with debt, and then getting out of school and then realizing they're going to work their entire lives and never be able to pay off this debt. So I think it's forcing those of us who are parents now to reconsider what does that look like. One other question, I want to keep moving because we got a few more minutes and we've got a few more questions I want to get through. We did get a few questions around long-term savings, so questions about retirement savings or 401k. One person asked this. They said, is it against Jesus' teaching to have a 401k? He said in Matthew 6, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. What would you say about the concept of saving for retirement? Throw the quotes there because I know that's not a word you love. So,
right. So the short answer is no. It is not wrong to save in a 401k. It's simply using your working years, your earning years, to save for those years when you might not be able to earn an income or receive a paycheck. So that's just called wisdom, saving for the future. you know, that's one way to do it. You know, a bank account buried in the backyard. You know, there's lots of ways to do it. A 401k is just a tax advantaged way to do it. So in my opinion, that's even smarter. You know, why not save some taxes along the way? This does bring up the question of how much is enough, though, because you know, I've seen many times over the years someone who is so focused on saving into the 401k or into the future pot of money that they work long hours, they neglect their family, they travel, you know, they make bad decisions along the way in order to save up this large pot of money or this large 401k. That's not a good idea. So, you know, there's three questions that I challenge all of my clients with, and they're pretty simple, but most of the time no one's ever asked them these questions before. The first one is, how much is enough? When do you know how much to save and when you've saved enough? You know, one of the saddest stories is the person who has worked so hard and maybe not been available to their family all these years and have saved quite a bit, and then it turns out they didn't need that much. And they could have made different choices along the way. They could have been more generous along the way. The second question is, how much is enough for my kids? The default is that I'll just work really hard, save a lot of money, and then leave it all to my kids. That's not actually the best thing to do for your kids. So really determining, you know, how much is enough for the kids. It's not a bad thing to leave an inheritance, but there's a point where it's too much, and that you've made decisions in order to be able to do that. They probably would have preferred to have you around more rather than leave them a big pot of money. The third thing is, then what do I do with the rest? And so, you know, those are the three questions. You know, how much is enough for me? How much is enough for my kids? And what do I do with the rest? And those are really challenging questions. You know, there was one other point I wanted to point out with the 401k. The verse that they referenced in Matthew. You know, I think that verse is really addressing more of a heart issue, you know, focusing more on possessions and accumulating more and bigger barns while you're here on earth, as opposed to focusing on what's going to be important for eternity. So I think that verse really points more towards a heart issue than the practical, you know, am I allowed to save for the future?
Yeah, and I want to wrap up with this question because I think it's a big one. This is the living question, and I think that question of how much is enough is not just a question for retirement. It's a question for today, too. One thing that several people wrote in and asked about was about our standard of living and how we set that. One person asked, should we all sell our possessions to follow Jesus, as the story goes? And another said, are Christians supposed to be wealthy? And they pointed out this guy, Kenneth Copeland, who's a television celebrity preacher guy, worth around $750 million. Or should we be poor like Franciscan monks who take a vow of poverty? With over 2,000 verses about money, does the Bible have any sort of overall message about money? Because these two examples seem to be on the opposite end of the spectrum. What would you say the Bible has to tell us about our standard of living? And how do you counsel clients maybe about that question?
So one of the specific questions in there was, are Christians supposed to be wealthy? So my answer is yes. Are Christians supposed to be poor? Yes. Are Christians supposed to be middle class? Yes. Just because you love God and follow the teachings of Jesus does not put you in a box as to, you know, what you're allowed to be as far as wealthy or poor, etc. We've all been given a different amount to manage. I don't presume to know why some people have been given more than others, but you know, that is the reality. And you know, it's not our place to judge, you know, how someone else is managing their pot. I have to focus on my pot and how I'm managing it. I think we will all be called to give an account one day of how we managed God's money and God's time. And, you know, we've been given a certain amount of time on earth as well. And so it's not my place to judge whether the wealthy televangelist is making good decisions. I honestly don't know. But he's, you know, when I work with my clients on cash flow, we go back to the very simple give, save, spend principle. And if you've given what you feel called to give, what you feel like God has asked of you to give, if you have saved appropriately, so you're not going to be a burden to society one day, but you've saved the right amount, then you're free to live on the rest. That doesn't mean that a lavish lifestyle is a good idea. You know, when people, and I often have people who are maybe embarrassed or self-conscious of their lifestyle, I don't tell them that their lifestyle is right or wrong. I simply point them back to, have you given as much as you feel like you should give? Have you saved as much as you should save? Then you need to feel the freedom to live on the rest. But my counsel is typically to go back and try to give more and see if that feels better. And it's amazing how, you know, when you're struggling with this idea of lifestyle, if you turn to being more generous, it really can alleviate some of that anxiety. You know, and there are, I mean, we've known them. I've known a number of Christians who have been blessed with the gift of making money. They have the Midas touch. Everything they touch turns to gold. That's not a bad thing. But they need to be wise with that. They need to make wise decisions with that money. They've been given a certain amount. They are then responsible for what they do with that. Honestly, you know, wealth in the hands of a generous person can be a very powerful thing. And that's really why I do what I do every day, because I see the power that comes from wealth given to someone who knows how to be rich.
Yeah. Well, and finance is just like so many other things. Comparison is just not helpful in either direction. And Kate's been really helpful in this. I mean, working in ministry, you're always in a fishbowl, and everybody gets to decide, oh, so the pastor got a new car. Oh. You know? Oh, must be nice to make that senior pastor money, you know? But you never know. You never know another person's story. And again, this principle from Jesus that says, hey, you know, before you go pointing out the speck in your brother's eye, look at the log in your own eye. I think if we spent the time to really wrestle with, and it's a wrestling. I think, you know, we're always asking that question. I think of the scene at the end of one of my favorite movies, Schindler's List, you know, where Schindler has spent all of this time, you know, keeping this operation going. He's a businessman that was employing Jews, keeping them alive, and he gets to the end, and the movie portrays he kind of lived kind of a crazy life even within the war, and he gets to the end, and he says, oh my gosh, I could have done so much more. Like, this car could have bought the freedom of so many more people. This ring, if I'd just done a little bit more. I think that's the wrestling that we all have, because one day the veil will be lifted and we'll see how we spent all of our time and all of our money. And I don't think any of us want to have that sense of regret of, I could have done more. So wrestling with that is a part of something that, regardless of how much you give or where you are financially on that spectrum, it's something we all wrestle with. Well, that's all we have time for. I would just, first of all, thanks Kate for stepping in and being willing to answer questions. She will be here after if you guys have some specific questions. And she's obviously part of our community. If you guys have some more complex questions or would like to meet her for lunch or coffee and ask some more personal financial questions, she's always glad to do that for people in our community. I'll just volunteer her time just like that. As she runs a business and does everything else she does. Let's pray as we close up together, and we'll wrap up. Thanks, Father, for this morning. Thanks that you've gifted us all in so many different ways. Thanks for Kate and not only her keen mind and insight into the ways of finance and the complexity of our world as it relates to money and possessions, but thank you also for her heart and her desire to live freely and to be a good steward, but also to help other people to do that. God, as we end this series, I just pray for each one of us that your spirit would meet us in this process wherever we are. And whatever our next step is, God, that you would make that abundantly clear. Give us the clarity to see the steps you want us to take. If it's giving, if it's saving, if it's spending, wherever you want to put the priority, God, help us to see that clearly. And then, God, give us courage to step into that, having faith and trust that you will meet us in that decision and that you will build in us the kind of character, the kind of generosity that really does lead to freedom. We pray all these things through the Son and by the Spirit.